The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Oh, good evening, everyone, and welcome. Can you hear me okay? In the outer hall? Good. So, I'm in the middle of teaching a two-week retreat, which I do every year. I teach at a hidden villa, so it's close by. I'm there during the day. People who are there, they're all day long. They stay there. And they're engaged in a long, silent meditation retreat. And the theme of the retreat, the basis for the instructions for this retreat, is a particular discourse that the Buddha gave called in Pali it's called the Anapanasati Sutta, the discourse on breathing mindfully. And in this, the heart of this text, is instructions for how to meditate with the breath, your breathing, at the center of the meditation. Just focusing on breathing. It seems that whatever references we have from the ancient texts of what kind of meditation practice the Buddha himself did, it seems that the primary reference is that he practiced mindfulness of breathing. There's an incident where he went off into the woods by himself to go meditate for a couple of months. And as he was leaving, he said to his disciples, he said, if anybody asks what I'm doing, you can tell them I'm practicing mindfulness of breathing. And then we have this, and in this discourse, where he praises the value of mindfulness of breathing greatly. He says, if you follow this mindfulness of breathing all the way and deeply, you'll fulfill the four foundations of mindfulness, you'll cultivate the seven factors of awakening, and you'll come to awakening yourself. So it's a beautiful kind of way of praising it, the importance of it. Outside of this particular discourse, there is not that much instructions of how to practice mindfulness of breathing. And in fact, in this discourse, the instructions are pretty brief, seemingly following an Indian tradition of just kind of giving the very briefest outline of some important teaching, with the idea, at least in India, is that someone, a teacher, is supposed to fill in the details. And so there's not a lot of detail, and so what it means is that different teachers have interpreted this outline for the practice in a little different ways. But it's a beautiful outline for meditation practice, and I wanted to kind of go through some of the points of it that I think maybe is useful. So the focus is on meditating on the breath, on breathing. And it's kind of all the time focusing on the breathing, and having the breath at the center of attention, developing both concentration and mindfulness. Many people in our scene who develop mindfulness practice often begin with breathing, but sometimes are very quick to let go of the focus on the breathing in favor of what sometimes is called open awareness, that you're just here in the present moment and you're just aware of what's happening as things are going on and you're very present noticing it. It's a beautiful way of practicing, though sometimes open awareness practice doesn't lend itself very well to getting very concentrated. It also doesn't lend, sometimes it lends itself to the idea that what you're supposed to do when you meditate is just sit there and be very accepting of everything, which you kind of are supposed to, but if you it's just a matter of accepting everything, why meditate? Just sit there and, that's part of the problem is people are sometimes accepting their mind too much already and just going along with it. I was accepting it just fine until I was told to meditate. So in the Anapanasati, and this discourse on mindfulness of breathing, the breathing is kept at the center all the time. So it works, breath meditation works as a focus of concentration, and also is used as a basis for developing insight or mindfulness, the two primary purposes of Buddhist meditation. But in the process of these 16 stages or 16 steps that this text describes, it kind of guides a person through deepening aspects of meditation practice, where your psychophysical state is changed in the process. And in fact, the idea here is that you're supposed to enter into kind of a meditative state or meditative kind of way of being. In other words, you're not supposed to just kind of end your meditation feeling exactly the same as you did when you started. Again, why bother? But rather, it's supposed to be a kind of a transformation, a change, if nothing else, more relaxed. So there's these 16 different steps to the practice. And these steps alternate a little bit between steps that involve just being present for something, just the way it is, just recognizing it, being present. And other steps which involve changing your experience, doing something about it. And so sometimes you're doing one and sometimes you're doing the other. The first thing you do in this practice is you sit down, establish some modicum of attention in the present moment, and then you focus on knowing or understanding, knowing what the experience of breathing is like. So that does a few things. As soon as the breathing is always in the present moment. And so if you're trying to stay with the breath in the present moment, you have to let go of a lot of distraction. You have to let go of a lot of scatteredness of mind and start focusing yourself here in the present moment. So the simple act of getting to know your breath as it occurs in the present moment is a focusing practice. And so a big part of what people have to do when they start meditating is learning to somehow not stay caught up in their thoughts. And it's one of the sometimes it's one of the hardest things to get across to some meditators that meditation is not what you think. Meaning a variety of things, but one of the things it means is that meditation is not a practice of thinking discursively about your experience. And a lot of people are so wedded to the discursive thinking, the kind of thinking that's making commentary, discussing what's going on, making stories of what's happening, assigning meaning to what's happening, interpreting what's happening. Kind of that whole level of kind of somewhat abstract, ongoing, kind of what's called discursive conversational thinking in the mind. Some people are so embedded in this kind of thinking, they don't even know they're doing it. It's just like the fish doesn't see the water they swim in, they say. And so everything's mediated through their thinking this way, that of course meditation should be the same thing. And sometimes it's very hard to step out of it, to see there's another way. Even people who realize there's another way, it can be very hard because the momentum of habit to think discursively is so strong. Many people have spent a lifetime giving unfettered permission to their discursive mind to wander this way and that way and think what it wants without any bounds on it, without any instruction to do differently. Even if you do, sometimes you give instruction, sometimes you focus your mind, discipline your mind for certain activities. But, great majority of the time, we're pretty passive in just letting our mind do whatever it wants. Letting our attention just follow the byways and pathways of what our thinking mind and our jumping mind, our scattered mind kind of picks up and goes after and does and, associated thinking. And one moment you're thinking one thing, another moment you're thinking something else, and your mind just follows along. And so in that kind of freedom, a certain habit of being, certain kind of passivity about the mind is operating. You give free rein to your mind. With mindfulness, with meditation practice, you stop giving free rein to your discursive thinking mind, so your attention, and it's free rein to let your mind direct where your attention goes. You begin to take some ownership or responsibility of your own attention. So in the beginning of meditation practice, it's not a passive use of your attention, but an active use. if this distinction makes sense. Usually we're passive, attention just is there, goes along for the ride, and we pay attention kind of whatever, you know, the mind thinks we should pay attention to. But here we are choosing to be active with our attention and not let it just kind of be yanked around. And what the activity is to begin becoming familiar with what the experience of breath is. I think it's significant that in this instruction, it just says, know your breathing. Know the qualities, the characteristics of your breath. It doesn't say judge it. It doesn't say change it. It doesn't say judge yourself. It doesn't say interpret it or anything with it. Just know it. It can seem so simple that the mind can protest and say, you know, this is look, ridiculous. The breath, I mean, I have important things to do. And figure out and fantasize about and plan and remember. And there's really important things. My life depends on it. And this breath, I mean, they talk about something boring. There's no monetary value. And so it can be hard for the mind to want to let go of all its concerns and really focus on the breathing. And it's a big training to do it. So it's good that the training begins with, by doing something very simple. There's no judgments. Just know it. Just be with it. So just come back and be with it. Get to know it. Get to know it. Stay with it. And for some people, it's very liberating right away to realize you can just do something so simple with the mind. And you don't have to kind of go off and plan and think and do other things that your mind does. It's also a powerful teacher because the breath is so simple. Breathing is so simple compared to a lot of things you could do. Simplicity is one of the best teachers because you'll see all the... It's easier to see the forces of the mind getting distracted and what it's caught up in and what it wants to do if you have a reference point. And so you have the reference point of the breathing, trying to be with the breath, and you see some people are amazed. They had no idea their mind was out of control until they have the reference point, stable, steady reference point of breathing. And then you get to see all the beliefs and momentums and feelings and that kind of pull you off, scatter you off from the breath. And you learn from that. You see that. You get to know it well. And as you get to know it better and better, it becomes easier to come back. So also the tradition talks about the more you can be with your breathing, just being simple with your breath, your attention is going into the breathing. And because that's where your energy of attention is going, you're starving your distractions. The tendency of the mind to be get lost in preoccupations and all the concerns you have, that is fueled by your energy of your attention. If you focus on it, you reinforce it. If you take your energy away from it, your attention away from it, they say it's you starve it. It kind of withers away or quiets down. So just a simple act of coming back and getting to know your breath, staying with your breath, is a radical thing to do. And some people will do just that for years to great benefit. You don't have to do much more. However, this discourse goes on and does more. And I'll kind of do it very broadly so I don't bore you with 16 steps. But just kind of the idea, general idea. That then you try to get to know the breath better and better. And at some point, as you get to know the breath better, you stay with the breath at the center, but you become aware of what's called in the text your bodily formations. It's a technical term in Buddhism. And the bodily formations are that part of your physical experience, what you can feel in your body, that's there because of what your mind has done. So the effect your mind has on your body. So how your body's been formed or shaped by the activities of your mind. So if you go around all day being tense in your shoulders, you sit down to meditate, and you feel that tension in your shoulders, you feel the shoulders up, that's called a formation that's been shaped by what your mind has been doing, being tense all the day, worried. Or if you're scared and you feel tightness in your belly, or if you're angry all the time and your jaws are clenched, then the tension there is it becomes that experience of tension there is called a formation because it's formed or shaped by what the mind has done. And so it turns out that a lot of what we call our experience of our body is been influenced, shaped by what our mind does. And even Abraham Lincoln knew this, who apparently said something like, by the time a person is 40 years old, he or she is responsible for their face. And, you know, it's interesting to see, you know, faces in different cultures. And maybe because they speak different languages, use different muscles, different expressions, you can see that actually the shape of the face gets shaped slightly differently by, you know, how it's used and what goes into it. And you see it sometimes in people's deep furrows, you know, or different expressions. They can kind of get locked in at some point. Or posture sometimes. People's postures get locked in from a certain way of holding all the time. So this is called the physical or bodily formation. So then the instruction about that is you're breathing. And you pay attention to that, get to know it, and then you relax it. The instruction is relax. So this is now the instruction is not just to watch and see, but the instruction is to soften, to relax your body. So let your shoulders relax, let your stomach relax, let your face relax. Whatever way you can soften your body that's easy to do, you soften, you relax. So in the beginning, you just get to know it, no change at all. But now you're instructed to make a change, which is to relax. And it's remarkable how many meditators don't relax. There's plenty of meditators who take on meditation as if it's, you know, really a serious thing. And, real serious, you got to kind of tighten up and burden down and try so hard. And especially on retreats, on meditation retreats where, you know, in day-to-day life, you know, mostly we're all already so tense, it doesn't take, you know, mostly we're relaxing. But on retreat, you know, then people get so serious. And so it's good to be encouraged to relax. But anyway, it's a beautiful thing to relax. It's a wonderful thing. You have to be a little bit careful that if you're really tired and you focus on relaxing, it might put you to sleep. So that you have to kind of watch and adjust accordingly. But the instruction is to actually, the Buddha said, relax your body. And the relaxation can be quite deep. And in fact, when you go on retreat, there's a deep, deep, deep relaxation that goes on that it's kind of like body work that goes on. People's physical body changes in very deep ways when there's a long period of time in silence, where the usual habits of the body are not being reinforced, when we're feeling and being present for what goes on deeply in our body. There's kind of an unwinding, unraveling of many of the ways that we're held. And it's, people often refer to it as deep body work to be there. So then the instruction goes on to just then experience. So as you relax your body, there's kind of an energy that gets released or a feeling tone that gets released. I don't know if you've ever felt it. I mean, if you clench your fist really, really tight and then let go, you feel the relief. You feel kind of this openness or this lightness that comes on. So the same thing with your body. When you start relaxing your body, it releases kind of a lightness or openness. Or another thing that happens, when you hold yourself tense all the time, the body is much more solid feeling to the body. And the body tends to have much sharper boundaries. Like, this is, I'm here, this is it. And often it's kind of brittle. The tighter we are, the more brittle we are. As we relax, the sense of solidity and sense of firm boundaries to the body begins to dissolve and relax. And there's much more feeling of the body being open and porous, maybe sometimes even transparent. Sometimes with your eyes closed, there's actually a feeling that there's no boundaries to the body. There's, you know, it's just kind of the edges of your body is kind of soft and kind of extend out beyond the real edges of your body. It's kind of the feeling. So there's a change that begins happening in your body. And generally, as you get focused and concentrated on the breath and you're relaxing the body, that the effect that it has is it brings about joy or a sense of well-being or happiness. And then the instructions are let yourself feel or experience that happiness, that well-being. Feel that goodness. And some people don't do that in meditation. There's occasionally some people who feel that maybe they're not supposed to be attached to feeling good, feeling joy, and so they say, I better not go there. But in fact, the instructions are feel it. feel the joy, feel the well-being that comes up from this deeper process of getting concentrated and relaxing in your body. Then the instruction is to do the same thing with what's called the mental formations. So first you just kind of get to know what goes on in the mind. Instruction, just know your mind, know your mental formations, and then relax it. Now the mental formations are the effect on the mind of how you use the mind. So the mind, so if you know, if you're tense, you know, your shoulders might get tense, but so does your mind. You feel the mind getting contracted and tight, or narrow or dark. Or if you're caught up in your thoughts, completely preoccupied in your thoughts, and kind of try to pay attention to what that's like compared to being relaxed in your thoughts, so people often report that things get very close, claustrophobic, tight, dark even. Some people refer to it, because it's like, I think it darkens because you're kind of lost in your thought. It can feel uncomfortable. It can feel like pressure. It's a variety of things it can feel to be caught up. There's going to be a lot of energy involved in your mental activity, and you can feel how that energy courses through your body, courses through your brain, courses through your mind. And so here, you start feeling what goes on in the mind, and then you're instructed to relax it. Now, this is particularly useful if you have a lot of thinking going on. If you're thinking a lot in meditation, thinking itself is a mental formation, and thinking itself, not only is it a mental formation, but it's fueled by other mental formations. So, for example, if there's a lot of incessant thinking, chances are is that there's a lot of pressure or tension to think. And you can feel that pressure or tension. Or there might be strong emotions that are connected to it. Like people who plan a lot will often worry. And so the worry is kind of like the fuel that keeps us planning and planning, because we're worried, we're trying to fix something or make ourselves safe. And so it's possible to kind of look at the phenomena of thinking, see the mental activity that's going on, and then relax. And it's a beautiful thing to begin softening, relaxing, calming the mind. I kind of think when I calm the mental activity, it's kind of like the brain spreads out. Rather than being a big lump, it kind of spreads, flattens out like the surface of a beautiful still lake. It becomes really wide. And, you know, the sense of boundaries, again, for the mind is pretty diffuse as well, or pretty open. I mean, where is your mind? You know? Usually you don't even know. And but then when the mind is getting relaxed and soft, it starts feeling very, very open. And it's a beautiful feeling to have the mind open. In the early texts, they talk about this very open mind sometimes and describe it as an expansive mind. In Zen, they sometimes call it big mind. The mind feels very, very expansive. So expansive, I mean, logically it doesn't make sense this way, but the experiential sense. So imagine you're hearing a sound 50 feet away or something. So you kind of recognize it's far away. But if the mind is very, very relaxed and soft, it's almost as if the mind, what is a mind after all? The mind's not the brain. Awareness is as extensive and reaches out as far as those 50 feet or 50 yards away where that sound is. It feels like it's broad and big, and the sounds happen within this big awareness. You don't have to feel this way, but this is often the consequence of being relaxed, very soft. So part of the instruction, the first instruction is notice the mental activity that's going on. Notice the mental formations, not just the thoughts, but all the other things going on. And then the next instruction is relax it. If you try too hard, it doesn't work. You don't want to have a high standard you're measuring yourself against. Just a little bit of softening. Maybe it's little teeny steps. Maybe every time you breathe out, you can remember to let go of what you're thinking. Every time you breathe out, maybe you soften. Maybe rather than relaxing, which you can't, you soften around it. You feel it's okay. Almost like you say, it's okay. And you soften a little bit. Soften. And so you begin relaxing the mind, softening the mind. So first the body, and then the mental activity. As the mental activity softens or relaxes, it becomes quieter too. It becomes less activity. And as it becomes less, the mind feels lighter, more open. Some people say there's more clarity. It has more... some people even talk about being luminous. Also tends to feel more stable. So the next instruction is to get to know the overall state of your mind, the mind state. Not the particular activities, but how you feel when your mind starts getting expansive or open or soft or relaxed. A soft mind, a concentrated mind is a soft mind. Some people don't know that and they bear down. They try to try so hard to get concentrated. But in Buddhism, a concentrated mind comes out of being soft and happy. And so then you relax, and then you're kind of open. And you're aware of this mind. You're aware of this expansive mind. Just aware of it as it is, the soft mind. Get to know it. And that gives you a very interesting reference point to understand something. When the mind is soft, relaxed, at ease, open, expansive, luminous, light. I mean, those are kind of big words, but even hints of that, just a little bit. It's possible to watch what happens in the mind and the body when you tighten up, when you get caught up in some concern. You come out of meditation, you're feeling a little calmer and more relaxed and open, and you walk and you turn on your computer. And it doesn't work that day. And your whole life is, you know, your whole life's in the computer. So, you know, this is serious. And so you can watch the mind get contracted and concerned and all the activities, and you've lost that openness by being latching on. That's maybe dramatic, or it could be a small thing. It could be that you had in mind to put on a certain shirt and you hadn't realized that it was still in the hamper and hadn't been washed. And so you go to look for the shirt and you see, you know, it's a small thing, you have other shirts, but then you feel how you get kind of tight because you have the wrong shirt to wear. And so by having, but if you were really tense to begin with, running around tense, frantic, trying to take care of all the thing, and you realize it was the wrong shirt, the shirt wasn't clean, you wouldn't notice that you tensed up even more because there's, you know, you're just super tense anyway. But if you're really relaxed, you can see how this operates. And part of the value of deep relaxation and meditation is to begin watching what the mind does. The point of it isn't so much that you want to keep going deeper and deeper and deeper, but rather at some point you want to be deep enough or calm enough that you can watch how you come out, what you do, how you get caught. So you can begin understanding what you do really well, what your tendencies are, what your caught-upness is, your fears and worries and how your mind operates, and how you can work with it in a wise way. How maybe you can go through your life taking care of what needs to be taken care of without tightening up, grasping, resisting. But going through and taking care of what needs to be taken care of, being relaxed. And that the way to learn that is there's no key, the best key I know, the best secret I know, is to watch and learn how you tense up. And how once you're a little bit tense, how you can relax again. And you'll learn about it. It's a long study. And so coming out of meditation is a very important place to study yourself and get to know what happens. But as this instruction continues, it isn't just a matter of... so then as you get better and better at this, then the instruction is to liberate the mind. So once you understand the open, how open the mind can become, then you do what it takes to begin letting go when you can. Let go into that more open mind. Let go into that more relaxed mind. Let go into that more clarity of mind that's there. Begin practicing letting go. And it has a beautiful term. It's called liberate the mind. So it has a more lofty kind of nice association, just letting go. But letting go Some people don't like the idea of letting go. Here are these Buddhists depriving us again. But letting go is a beautiful thing because it's not so much what you let go of, which you have to let go of something, but rather what you can let go into. And so we're letting go into peace. We're letting go into a greater intimacy with ourselves, letting go into a greater presence, letting go into being more relaxed. And we gain something when we let go of the clinging and the tightness of the mind. We don't lose. It's not about deprivation, it's actually about gain. So this process of first getting to know the breath, the body, relaxing the body, getting to know the mental activity, relaxing the mental activity, getting to know the mind state, the overall state of consciousness, and learning to liberate it, to keep more open, is the three quarters of this process of these 16 steps. It goes between just knowing something and doing something. And it's very, very important to be wise back and forth, because some people are really good at have fix-it mind. And they just go in there and tinker and manipulate and engineer their way. And it's just another way of being tense and caught up. And it's really wise to not try to do too much, but just get to know the mind, get to know the breath. Just try to, you know, put aside the fix-it mind, the engineering mind, the doing mind, the grasping mind, the searching mind, the mind that's trying to make something happen. And relax, just with what's happening here. And when you have some ability to do that, then it's actually much more effective to do something, to relax, to begin softening. The relaxing of the mind, the relaxing of the body, is a wonderful protection for meditation practice, so that your meditation practice itself doesn't become tense, which is possible to do, especially if you go on retreat and you're doing it all the time. And as a teacher, I know sometimes it's hard for people to learn to properly relax. What happens on retreat is often our deeper habits of mind kick in with greater strength, maybe they don't kick in stronger, but they get highlighted. They stand out in relief, and so you start seeing that you're always adjusting and manipulating or changing, always afraid, always trying to get something to happen, always judging, always doing something. And it can be so built into, you know, who we think we are, that we never question it. We never question the discursive thinking or some of the thinking, because it's so obvious. This is what we, you know, so familiar. But when you use relaxing as a reference point, and start you're feeling your way into something you can feel here in the present moment, you relax into your body, relax into your mind, it's very hard to keep going some of these old tendencies because they require attention. To hold them a little bit. So we relax. And it's beautiful to use relaxation as a path, or softening, actually, or calming. So, all along, all these steps that I've been describing, all along the person is staying with the breath. Breathing in, breathing out, continuous. Breathing with the body, breathing with the experience of mental activity, breathing with the mental state. It's like the breathing is like the anchor that keeps us in the present moment. It's the reference point that keeps us centered. It's like the center of, it's like a ballast of the boat that keeps the boat from tipping over. And so the training is to stay with your breath, and you're concentrating on breath, but you're not only focusing on the breath. There's an open, you're kind of tracking what else is going on in the present moment, so you can also pay attention to your body, your mental activity, your mind state, and attend to it in a proper way. And then as this goes deeper and deeper, at some point it opens up to the last four of the 16 stages, and that is to cultivate insight, to see more clearly what's going on. And with the insight practice, we start seeing that the primary things we're seeing that the things that we cling to in our life are not so interesting to cling to. They might be interesting for other reasons, for other purposes, but not for the purposes of grasping. And it's very hard to educate the mind that to teach the mind to become disinterested in clinging. And so once you've done all these different steps and gotten really this good state of mind, relaxed and open, you put yourself in a very good situation to begin looking at the things that you cling to and realize and see, you know, I don't think I need to do this anymore. I don't need to hold on to this anymore. And then it's not so easy to let go of the deepest clinging we have. So the description that happens next is that the things we cling to start to fade away. The clinging begins to fade. It's not like you find this on and off switch, suddenly you stop clinging. But you, as you get less interested, it begins fading away, fading away, fading away, until this wonderful moment happens, or time happens, where the, whatever clinging that you've been living with for a while, you recognize now it's gone, it's ceased, it's gone. And that's a beautiful thing. Because then the heart, the mind, is unbounded. The heart and mind is set free, is open, luminous, clear. It's a beautiful thing, the free heart. And so to do the work of freeing the heart is one of the most beautiful things a human being can do. So that's what they're doing these 2 weeks at the retreat. And they have all kinds of adventures in the process. So I hope that maybe in giving this talk I gave you a little flavor of the retreat. We have about 5 minutes if anyone would like to ask a question about that for clarity and anything or anything else.
I just have a question about is this like a lifetime process? Are you talking about you're trying to do this every meditation session?
Oh, that's a good question. Okay. Some people will go through all 16 steps in a meditation session, but I think it could also be like on the retreat, we're doing like one step a day, you know, do it slowly. And you know, as I said in the beginning, you can spend a lifetime just on step one, just coming back and being with your breath. It's quite powerful. So sometimes it's really good to get really good or get really stabilized in one of these steps, before you move on too quickly. And so it might take a year for someone to go through these because you want to just kind of really get to know each one well.
So I just have a comment, which is it's interesting to me that this alternation between just noticing and then relaxing, because I'm a piano player, and so relaxing has been really important in learning to play the piano well, and at some point in the last few years, I finally realized that the best way of trying to relax was to just notice where the tension was, and so. I would kind of slow down and play slower and slower until I could actually feel where the tension was. And then actually I didn't even feel that I had to relax it. It just happened naturally.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing when just in knowing something really well, it lets go by itself.
Yeah.
And sooner or at some point, that's a really important lesson. So we're not always taking responsibility. The idea that it's all up to us, we have to do something, itself is a kind of clinging. And so sooner or later, it's good to learn that we don't have to always be the one in charge. Okay, so I hope that made some sense to you. And I hope that those of you who are interested will fall in love with your breathing. It's a beautiful thing to practice with your breath. And I've been focusing my breathing like this for my whole adult life. And the more I do it, the more I love it. So, thank you.